It's the 2020 Awesome Awards, and we're talking about video games here on the Awesome Cast. Hello, folks, and welcome once more, or for your first time, to the Awesome Cast, your podcast for everything awesome. I'm Basil, and I'm going to do introductions a little bit differently because I decided to give everyone goofy nicknames. So we've also got my retail brother-in-arms, Kevin.
That's me.
My first gentleman, Doug, of the podcast.
I guess that's me.
That is you.
I'm not sure I like you calling me a gentleman. That feels weird.
Look, I'm referring to the fact that we now have a second gentleman in office who is also named Doug.
Oh, I see. Ah, yes, it was a very good day for Dougs.
Yeah.
It was a very good day for Dougs.
Also, get better, Dylan.
Hopefully I'm fine.
Yeah, we are all hoping that you are fine, along with our Charlies in charge.
Yes, I am. Of your days and your nights.
Our wrongs and our rights. And good God, that just didn't age well.
Nope.
No, it didn't.
Thanks to our luge lover, John.
Yes.
So, yes, we are the Awesome Cast, your podcast for everything awesome. And this time we're covering, with our 2020 Awesome Awards, video games, Adipion. Because remember, if you don't know Dream Club... You don't know jack squat about Japanese culture.
You have no right to speak of it. None.
So, we're pretty much going to be talking about just how much we love Dream Club in this episode.
Everyone's picks were Dream Club.
It's been so long since I watched that video.
I'm still going with Tifa.
You're not wrong.
So, to do somewhat of breaking the ice, something I did want to ask everyone... So, what 2020 games that you have not yet had a chance to play or you've been thinking about playing in 2021?
What?
Well, there were a lot of video games that came out in 2020.
Well, we needed a lot of video games.
Well, sure it's true.
Yeah.
But I know I have got a whole list of games I want to play in 2021 that also came out last year.
Eventually Star Wars Squadrons, but my backlist is pretty stacked right now, and I don't feel right dropping $40 on another game.
I actually have Squadrons. The ones on my list are ones that I now own. I would have said Assassin's Creed Valhalla, but I just started playing that a few days ago. So that leaves Spider-Man Miles Morales and Star Wars Squadrons, I think, are the only two, maybe, that I haven't started yet.
I have Aegis Rim. I got it for Christmas, but I haven't started it yet, so that's one. Miles Morales would definitely be another one.
I do need to go back and play more Aegis Rim. That seems pretty great.
Yeah, it's VanillaWare, so I'm here for it.
Technically, it's a 2019 game, but I really want to play Pathologic 2. But much like Pathologic 1, it's a game about surviving a plague. And I'm not really ready for that.
I never want to play the board game Pandemic again.
Yeah.
Like,
I literally played Pathologic 1... based on a YouTube video from a guy that I recommended on the first one because of his video on the game. And it's like, that was, less than half a year before the pandemic started.
But yeah, I know 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim, that's actually what is currently in my PlayStation 5. But
that's the time traveling visual novel game thing.
Yes, where I cannot resume watching or listening to the besties, but it's apparently during their best of episode, Chris freaking plants. Like, all right, I'm going to drop some spoilers out. And I'm like, nope, I'm going to play this game. Don't you dare drop spoilers.
Oh, that's right.
Well, it's a vanillaware, side-scrolling, exploring, adventure game, visual novel, mecha simulator.
Yeah.
Real-time strategy game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everything I know about the game is from the besties, so...
You can slap a lot of tags on that game and technically be accurate.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I succumbed to all the hype. I purchased Hades for the Switch, but I was also gifted a copy of Immortals Fenyx Rising for the Switch, so now I have two very wildly different takes on a ye olde in Greece game. And I'm pretty sure Hades is the better one.
It is.
So I'm like, so I play Fenyx Rising because that way I'm not disappointed as much.
Smart. You'll have to let me know how Hades
is. Pretty
great,
actually, even though it's not on my list.
I've heard super good things about it.
I don't even like roguelikes or roguelites or any of that variety, but Hades is amazing.
And see, I was I'm like, I just don't like rogue games. And I paused and went, no, that's Kevin. I like rogue games pretty okay.
Wait, you momentarily forgot that you weren't Kevin.
It happens.
Yeah, it does.
I mean,
it really
fair.
Does.
I'm not judging. That's fair.
Especially not having Kevin around, like, in my actual presence for so long. Yeah, you really start wishing you were Kevin because you miss Kevin.
I like to think that you walk by like a hall mirror and you're wearing like Kevin's convention Hawaiian shirt and you're like, what? Where did I even get this?
Been alone too long.
Pandemic madness.
It happens.
All right. So let's dig into these games that we really enjoyed in 2020. We're going to go around the virtual table once, then around the virtual table again. And just like the past two episodes, we're going to start with Doug.
Okay, so for me, the game that got me through 2020 was Animal Crossing. And all of you guys are talking about all these other video games, and I don't know what the heck you mean, because the only game that came out that actually mattered was Animal Crossing, New Horizons.
I have to say, I think you probably picked... You made the best choice of all possible games for your number one, because I really feel like Animal Crossing kept the whole internet going
It kept everybody going.
Yeah.
At least for the first half of the pandemic, if not for the entire thing.
I mean, so many people played Animal Crossing, like even the normies got into Animal Crossing.
I have not played it, and yet I feel like I played it because my Twitter feed was like a good 65-70% Animal Crossing for at least like April, maybe part of March, and also May.
And a solid 3% of that is toilet related.
Maybe.
Oh God,
maybe
it's true.
I have also not played Animal Crossing, but I somehow love seeing people posting about Animal Crossing.
Yeah, it was kind of... I didn't not enjoy it.
Yeah, I got into it late. Like, I got it for my birthday in October, and so I'm still working to pay stuff off, and I've kind of gone off what?
I don't know, the way you said it just made me laugh.
Well, I mean, it's true. Like, I don't want to criticize it because it's a good game, but I definitely feel like it stops introducing new mechanics at a certain point before you pay off your final house. And like, I think I was expecting like a Stardew Valley or a Moonlighter where it's like, you're going to go in this really, really tight cycle and you're just constantly going to be, there's going to constantly be something for you to do.
Mm. No.
Yeah, no, this game is
my mind.
Way more chillax than that.
I've been playing it pretty much since the start, and it's way more relaxed than that. And I've also gone in phases of playing it. Like, right now I'm not playing it, but between Christmas and New Year I was playing it every single day for several hours at a time. And then, you know, I didn't play for a little while, but in October I was super playing, like, really hardcore. And then I didn't play for a little while, and, you know, in I think, like, in August, I was still playing really hardcore all the way from the beginning. And that's actually how Animal Crossings are meant to be played, is they're meant to be played just, like, a little bit every day.
Yeah, and every so often there's an event that you want to log back in to participate in.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, if you want to hear us talk about more about Animal Crossing, there's a whole podcast for that. We did an episode that you should definitely, if you've not listened to it, go back and check it out. We like Animal Crossing a lot. Now, Kevin, on the other hand, his equivalent of Animal Crossing New Horizons has been a little bit controversial.
Oh, definitely. Definitely controversial.
Oh, no. What did you do, Kevin? What did you do?
Because, boy, did I play... Technically, I'm still playing it. Is Cyberpunk 2077.
That's not a 2020 game, is it?
It sure is.
Towards the end.
What?
It's the most 2020
yeah.
game.
What?
Just an absolute failure on every front.
Yeah, like, to get out of the way first, man, CD Red Project did some messed up stuff.
It both launched and got pulled in 2020, yeah. I think.
Like, CD Red
within
Project,
like, the same
like,
week.
Like, we are not going to crunch our employees, and then they crunch their employees. They were like, it'll run fine on your old generation consoles. It did not run fine on my old generation console.
Like, now I get it, because I remember back in the day when Skyrim first came out, it was an abhorrent buggy mess, especially on the PlayStation 3. Now, you may ask yourself, what console did Kevin play Skyrim on?
PlayStation 3. Also, a little bit of background is I'm actually a big fan of almost every thing our Talsorian Games has put out for tabletop games, which includes Cyberpunk 2020, the original version of Cyberpunk, because Cyberpunk 2077 is actually a direct sequel to their Cyberpunk 2020 tabletop game, and it even has stuff that you just won't appreciate if you haven't at least read some of the fluff text of the role-playing game books.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Like, there are flashbacks of stuff in 2012 making the game alternate history, but,
No, sorry.
It is a first-person, open-world, RPG, action RPG that I feel like a lot of people overemphasized its problems, and some early-on patches fixed most of them. It still is not running like they wanted it to on the PS4. It may never run like they wanted it on the PS4.
I remember watching Barry play it for a moment, and he was like, yeah, see, this looks like a thing, and oh, and there's some T-posing, and oh, hey, it crashed, and he is playing on a PlayStation 5.
Yeah. But there is, I find something strangely compelling in this game. Like, I was actually, off for a couple weeks when it came out, that was like for quarantine reasons, and I really just played the hell out of it. You know, sure, it crashed every couple hours, but but you know, like, you get under the game's problems, and there's a core that is a really interesting game, especially in a lot of interesting characters and vignettes. And I like that the game, like, won't just immediately throw you in the next thing in a quest chain. They'll have to, like, get back to you the next day or something. So it encourages you to go find out what somebody else is doing. But it also kind of keeps all the NPCs in your life. So they start to feel like, you know, friends of your character. Or at least associates. Like, the characters feel like they have some life to them, especially, like, the bigger quest lines.
The vending machine is the best character.
What?
Yeah, there no joke. The vending machine is the best character.
I kind of liked Gary the Prophet, but who doom says right outside where you will probably walk out of your general practitioner cyberdoc.
I mean, it really sounds like the problem most people had was this game was overhyped, or this game built up a lot of hype. I don't want to make it sound
yes.
like
oh, it definitely.
Was, it was the fault of CD Projekt Red. And you had people who basically thought this was going to be a perfect masterpiece, knowing that that's almost impossible to create something that large and have it be that perfect.
Yeah, no, if assuming they iron out the game-breaking glitches, it's probably a really solid 7 out of 10. Like, I think Kotaku gave it a 7 out of 10, and that's about fair. Like, I find it especially compelling because I like the RPG that spawned it. And Keanu Reeves lives in my brain and won't let me die.
For real or in game?
In the game. Totally in the game.
Oh, God. I remember we just happened to be back in the times where you could hang out. Kevin and I were hanging out over at Doug and Barry's place, and they were, E3 was happening, and Keanu Reeves walk on stage, and all that stuff happens, and then they reveal that he's playing Johnny Silverhand. Everyone's like, oh man, Keanu Reeves. And we're kind of going, Johnny Silverhand is dead. How is he in this game? I am already kind of peeved at this game. One, because I am very vocal about super buggy games. Like, I've been a mostly very anti-Bethesda overall compared to most folks. So that annoys me a lot, how they release Cyberpunk in this state. B, I can't play first-person games, so they already made a game I can't play, so screw them on that. But I'm glad that, you know, Kevin, Barry, a friend of mine, Savan, a lot of them have been able to, I don't know if it's Stockholm Syndrome, but even through all the terrible optimization crashes and horrendous bugs, they still come out very positive overall on this game.
Okay, yeah, there's definitely something good about it, but I got real bored of it real fast. I think because Barry mostly does it through, he mostly went through like the hacker route, which turns it into mostly menu selection throughout the entire game. And that got real boring real fast for the person who is not playing the video game.
I have played through that way. And then I played trying like more of a reflex, and then after that body focused to play mm-hmm. with the stuff that's, well, the cyberware that speeds up your perception, to, and then for the ones that make you super tough. hacking is probably the easy mode. I do kind of like the super reflex stuff. I can sometimes kill like half a dozen people before they even see me, though.
Now, to compare and contrast, not really, but an interesting inverse, because John's pick is, in fact, I feel, a game that's been in development just as long. The hype was just as real, and boy, did it land with a particular well done drop and a nice little sword twirl.
You know, when we were talking about, okay, games of 2020.
Oh.
Well.
Oh, this game.
The two that played the most were League of Legends and Animal Crossing. We already talked about Animal Crossing ad nauseum, and I talked a little bit about League of Legends during our internet episode when I talked about skill cap. So I wanted to pick a couple of games that I felt just needed to be mentioned, even though I didn't play them as much. And I only rather recently started Final Fantasy VII Remake. And the reason I included it, even though I'm probably like 7 or 8 hours into it, it hit me in a way I did not anticipate. Because, you know, talking about the remake itself has been anticipated since, you know, the PS3 was revealed, and they did a tech demo of the opening, and everyone thought it was an announced game, but it wasn't. And it's been so long since the original Final Fantasy VII came out, and that game has aged so poorly as just like a general experience. It looks awful, you know, it's got random battles, it's just generally unpleasant unless, you know, you just really, really love that game and have it has, you know, some really special place in your heart. I wanted to play the remake just because, you know, it was one of those touchstone games. It was one of those things that everyone was talking about, and the game was pretty well received. But when I started playing it, I got hit with a nostalgia for the game I didn't know I still had. Because yes, my feelings about Final Fantasy VII have eroded over the years because of, you know, the various and spotty expansion of the universe with games like Crisis Core or Dirge of Cerberus. And not to mention, in 1997, I was a sophomore in high school when that game came out. I had never been to an anime convention. No one else in my school even played that game, I don't think.
Sure they did. They just probably played it like in secret and then quiet.
No, there were like 40 people in my graduating class. I would have known if
never mind.
Played it.
Never mind.
Yeah, it was a very small school. And yeah, going to conventions over, you know, the last, I guess it's been about 15 years now. You see so many Final Fantasy cosplayers. It just got ran into the fucking ground. And, you know, all I could do is associate Final Fantasy VII with kids at Hot Topic. and you know, my feelings about the game just got eroded over time. And then I started playing the game and I'm like, it took me back to when I originally played the game, when it was new, when it was fresh, and you know, I was experiencing those characters and events for the first time, and I really did not anticipate that game doing that. You know, you made a joke earlier about Tifa Basil, but yeah, like playing that game again, I'm like, oh yeah, I really did like Tifa a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this is Final Fantasy VII. I know it's the remake. I know things happened. This is Final Fantasy VII. Like, yeah. It is amazing how much this is Final Fantasy VII, the remake really is.
Right.
You know, it's interesting what you said about going to cons, having that, like, giving us that perception of kids running around. Because we're older than the typical con-going crowd, and I think we were even then. And they're experiencing this like in their teens, when they're like the moody and emotional teens. Like, they're feeling about this the same way I felt about Link to the Past and Final Fantasy VI and stuff like that, where no one else would understand that if you played it when you're not like overwhelmed with, you know, hormones and emotions. I mean, seriously.
But yeah, I have genuinely been impressed by the game just because of the way it's made me feel. I didn't know I still had those feelings for Final Fantasy VII.
It's not just the Final Fantasy VII that was. It is the Final Fantasy VII that existed in your heart.
Right. It's right, not like down. Firing up the PS1 version and being like, oh god, that looks terrible. Even though, in the day, that was bleeding edge technology in 1997. It was.
Yep. I feel like the background work is still pretty amazing, but the actual character models are...
I really can't wait for the guy that's currently using, like, AI learning and stuff to pretty up and recreate all those backgrounds, but actually in something resembling high definition. And I'm going to go to play for those. I really want to play 7 with those mods once they're done to actually experience the original game. But until then, man, that the 7 Remake really, really takes you there. It really does.
And Basil, you were playing like the original like 7 port onto the PlayStation Vita, weren't you?
No, I was playing the Switch version while I was also playing
Remake. Oh, yes, that's what I meant.
Which maybe really, when I then discovered there was someone doing mods and stuff to eventually make the original 7 actually look pretty darn good, or at least as best as you're going to be able to make it. It frankly probably should be what Square did for the port in the first place. So now I'm actually kind of looking forward to playing that version once it's done. But to go back to a moment, because we've been talking about cons and stuff, because my first pick, we actually first played at MomoCon a couple of years ago, you know, back when we could go to a MomoCon. And y'all, Peggle is back!
What?
It is called Round Guard, and it is amazing. God, I love Round Guard. It is the good shit. Hell yeah, Round Guard. God damn. So, Round Guard is you take the gameplay of Peggle, where it's kind of this pachinko-y thing where you can aim the ball and it'll drop and it'll hit these pegs, and you clear off these pegs, you win the level, then boom, rainbows, and it's awesome. You take that, you throw in some role-playing game stuff, and you throw in some roguelike stuff, and that's when you get Round Guard, where you can choose to be like a warrior-type person, or a rogue-type person, or a mage-type person, and they each have their own abilities that you can get through randomized playthroughs through all these various Peggle-style maps, and you shoot the character out, they hit the things, but all those special abilities, like, for example, I really like playing rogue because one of the options you can get is a double jump, so I can be like, ah, I aimed myself this way, whoop, whoop, nope, that's a pit, let me just go this way. Haha, I hit an enemy. But you gotta be careful because the goal in Round Guard is to kill all these enemy pegs. And they're all like orcs and skeletons and witches and all those good role-playing game bad guys you love to be able to aim your little ball character and just whap them real good. But they can also damage you as well. They have their own attacks. And there are a bunch of different level types where each monster has their own different, you know, peg orientations. And after you get done, then you get hopped into like a randomized power-up. It might be like better weapons or armor or a better version of an ability or like a new ability. And so you can sort of create your character as you go down. It is, but it, and then you defeat everything and then boom, rainbows. And it is. Okay. Yup! This is better than Peggle. This is Round Guard. It's awesome.
I
literally just bought it, Basil. I literally just bought it right now as you were talking about it. It's 50% off on Steam. Maybe not when this goes up, but when we were talking about it, it was.
I actually went back and played this, I think, in December.
I'm actually tired of forgetting this game exists because I played it with Basil and I want it, but I keep forgetting it exists.
Yeah, I will say for me, like, I was not ready for how much roguelike and different options. Like, I think they have a puzzle of the week you can do. They have a puzzle of the day. And there's a lot of different things you can do. And for me, it was like, I'm going to do one playthrough and then I'm out, because if I get too much further into this, like, the completionist is in me is going to kick in, and I'm just going to bore myself. I'm going to play this so much. Oh, I'm going to smoke the entire pack.
Dylan, you don't understand. There are relics that you can earn in the game, and it all changes, like, the gameplay just a little bit. Like, for example, there's more or less the Mercy or the Easy Mode relic, where the gameplay isn't as hard to do, but you get less gold, which is important because there are also leaderboards. So if you want to compete with other folks and you want to get like high scores to show off, Mercy will not really help you. But there are other ones, like where you might, the enemies hit harder, but all the drops are like rare or better. Because there are, of course, different levels of drops to these things. But if you play through the relic once while it's equipped, you then master it and then get a new relic to try. So, no, the hole goes deep, Dylan. Gets really deep.
Oh, no, I was aware of the relics, and like I said, I went to the page and like, okay, I've unlocked a few of these. Man, I'm going to have to play this a lot. But like you said, the Mercy Relic gives you a good way to kind of dip your toe in, play, and then if you don't want to get hardcore into the roguelike elements, you can kind of be done and be on your way.
I know when I did my first, when I beat it the first time, I was playing as the Barbarian Warrior guy. And the two abilities I really, really worked for me was an upgraded version called Killing Joke, where the idea is that this barbarian, he tells really bad jokes because he's pretty much a himbo. And
himbo, yay!
And it'll instantly kill enemies if their HP's low enough. But an upgraded version of it, if you get the random chance for it, will also destroy all the pots slash pegs around you. So you get that, and then there's one called Reckless Charge, where you can also pretty much immediately start throwing yourself towards the next enemy. Putting those together, I was literally just clearing the entire board, and it's like a couple of turns each time. And then every time I tried to get that set up again, I've died. So the rogue is strong with this one, but man, I... Round Guard, it has been... It is a game that I delved in real deep into at March when it first launched. But then so did Animal Crossing came out. And so I started playing a lot of Animal Crossing. But slowly but surely, Round Guard's like, yeah, no, I get it, man. Animal Crossing, it's cool. But you need that peggle back in your veins. And I was like, yes, Round Guard, thank you. And what I need to know is why Charlie thought this game that he's talking about that very much did not come out in 2020 is his 2020 game.
Is it Tales of Vesperia?
No. You know it's not.
No, well, here's the thing. I only, like, really in 2020, I feel like I only played, like, two games with any regularity. And Dylan stole the other one from me.
Wait, what?
Like, Jackbox would have been my pick. Like, not to... Spoilers. Oh. Sorry. Rewind. Spoilers. So, I picked Overwatch, which was the only other game I played with much regularity. And that was my whole... That was really just my whole logic for picking that game. There's nothing to be really be said about Overwatch that hasn't already. I've owned it for a couple of years, and this 2020 was the first year I actually like got into any of the seasonal stuff, because I like played a lot during. I guess the two big spikes for me were during the Summer Games event and then during the Halloween event. Because there were skins that I wanted, so I like played a lot like right at the beginning of the pandemic, saved up the currency, and then played a bunch during the limited time events, and then spent a lot of what I had saved up just to get those things. So that, I don't know what else there is to say about it. It's still a pretty fun game, but I actually haven't played it probably since the Halloween event, actually.
Who do you typically play?
Man, that really depends. I, like, when I very first started playing it, I tried being good at Anna, and I really wasn't. So, I played Moira almost exclusively, and then really ended up, as far as healers going, because I tend to play healer, I really ended up loving Lucio.
Yeah.
And then if I was playing tank, it would usually be Ho-ho, it's been a while. D.Va or... Oh, what's her name? Is it Arisa?
Yeah, the robot.
Yeah, those were my favorites. And then occasionally, if I were playing where, you know, you don't have to have two of each, I really got pretty good at Sombra, honestly. I don't think I won a lot with her, but I got pretty good at just never dying, because I would just, like, run in, maybe get a few shots in, probably not kill anybody, and then, like, teleport out onto a heal pack, onto a health pack.
She
and
is,
just keep doing that.
I feel like she's tough to use effectively. Like, I almost never play DPS, but I don't play her.
I don't think I was effective in the sense of, like, getting a lot of kills or winning a lot. I think I was... I think the best thing... My scale of being effective with Sombra was I annoying?
Yeah.
And the answer almost inevitably was yes. I must have been annoying for somebody, because they would think that they'd gotten rid of me. And here I am back a few seconds later, just like hitting them a little bit, drawing their attention, and then zipping out again before they could kill me.
I've mentioned this before on the These Are Video Games stream. Overwatch Wednesday nights, twitch.tv/thesearevg. I don't really think Sombra's a DPS. I think Sombra's more of a support character. Mm. I feel like she's mislabeled, because she doesn't do a ton of damage.
You're right.
She's more, like you said, to harass.
Yeah.
And I feel like having her listed as a DPS kind of mislabels her.
I mean, I think you're right as far as like what she's best utilized for. And honestly, you could switch out like her hacking ability, if it also gave you the option to hack allies to heal them or boost them in some way, I think you could switch her over to support so easily, and like nobody would even bat an eye.
Yeah. Well, she can hack health packs and
That's
make
true.
Them regenerate faster, so there's a little bit of that.
That is a good point. I forgot about that.
I will say, just in general about Overwatch, it's a class-based shooter. I kind of have the same feelings about it that I do League of Legends. Like, you get used to your heroes, you learn the team fight tactics that you need to use, but as opposed to a lot of games like that, it's really easy to get into. And it's really easy to sit down and play a 10 or 15 minute game and get out.
Yeah,
and
right. There's not a lot. You don't have to learn a whole lot if you only really like gravitate to like, if you want to learn a bunch of different characters, sure. And even within a character, there are, like you say, there's a lot of ways to learn certain strategies, especially in conjunction with other characters. But it is really super simple to just jump in. Okay, this is my set list. This is what I can do, and just go and not have to. You can do a lot of learning by doing.
Yeah, that's not to say you can't have some really good plays that feel like they take a lot of skill.
Oh, absolutely.
And are really satisfying when they come off, but those are mostly situational. It's not like a lot of games where you have to be poking more actively, depending on what you're playing.
Yeah, you're right. It is a good game to just, if you want to do something for 10, 15, 20 minutes, just jump in, do. You're not having to worry about a whole lot of like choices.
Yeah.
And speaking of choices, Dylan had a choice that I didn't have to worry about, because I'm not sure what it is. Dylan, tell us all about that.
I picked Outward. I picked this up, I think, in a Humble bundle sale or Humble store sale for like $15. So if you wait for a sale, you can get this pretty reasonably. Outward is an open world game that really scratches the Elder Scrolls exploration itch. Although it's a little bit fiddlier. So there's no fast travel. You have to manage food, water, and sleep. which sounds bad, but it's like basically you need to set up camp and maybe do some fishing once every 30 minutes or so.
Games need to have a fishing mini game. It's very important.
Yeah. This is more just like spear fishing, so it's not quite the full fishing mini game, but there's still a lot of, you know, you take the fish, you pick up some water in a water skin, you boil it over a campfire, you eat the fish, and that protects you from getting sick from eating the fish and drinking the river water. Again, not as fiddly as it sounds like, and I think one of the reasons I liked it during 2020 was I'm not traveling at all. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of nice just to, okay, I'm going to bring up the map. By the way, the map doesn't tell you exactly where you are. You have to kind of identify major landmarks. I'm just going to pick a direction and go do the next thing that I need to do. Hmm. I think if there's a downside, when I first played this, combat is very timing based and can kind of feel janky. I don't know if this was the fact that the first really good weapon I picked up was a two-handed sword, which is really slow. But you've got stamina that you have to watch out for. You have like an impact meter that if you get hit too many times, you fall over and get captured.
That sucks.
Yeah, it's a lot of blocking, and like make sure you're not blocking too much because then you don't have the stamina you need to attack. I did go back and start a game earlier this week. There's a legacy system where you can put an item in a chest in one game, and if you create a new game off of that game, like create a new character, then when you get to that chest, it'll be a better item. But I started up a new game, and I did not have the difficulty, even after several months, that I did with combat, so they may have balanced things a little bit better. And the nice thing is, if you get killed, like if you lose your health, or if you fall over, you don't die. You either get sent back to town, or you get captured, or you get picked up by a helpful traveler. And so you learn to kind of trust the game and go, okay, I'm never going to lose anything in my gear, so I can take a few more risks. I think the only real downside is there are a couple quests that will set off a timer where you lose your house and your stash, or you lose the city, or something like that. Ultimately, like I didn't play it past the main story quest, and I feel like I missed out on a lot because I never got to the point where I was powerful enough to feel safe going into some of these really cool looking places and exploring them. But there's still quite a bit to the game, and I definitely recommend it if you like exploration.
And I recommend that you keep on listening, although we're going to take a quick audio break. We're going to be back with yet another set of games that we really enjoyed in 2020. This is the Awesome Cast. And we're back.
Hope you enjoyed those words. Waiting in hell
for the MyPillow guy.
Although, well, they have in no way sponsored this. I know we didn't mention it in the first Awesome Awards. I don't remember if I mentioned it in the second set of Awesome Awards. But I did want to point out that our wonderful editor, Anna, did guest star on a recent Third Impact anime about the second Sailor Moon movie, the one where it snows a lot on Tuxedo Mask is Santa Claus.
Oh, Third Impact anime, that podcast that hasn't had me on to talk about Evangelion yet?
Well, hopefully they'll get on that.
They're working up to you.
Uh-huh.
Because Anno's number one, you're number two, everybody else. So they have
and
to
it
work,
is number one. I'm not even going to argue that point.
Then what are you doing? Then what are you saying?
I'm saying I'm the number one Evangelion aficionado that no one knows ever cares about.
Okay.
Well, too bad, because we're talking about our number twos now.
Yeah, we are. Man, I had so many yesterday. I had three whole big ones, too. I'm really concerned.
I had a real problem with my number twos yesterday. Like, I was very close to making Basil leave so that I could just, like, have bathroom time. But I didn't. I got over it.
Why would you make Basil leave for that? Was he in the bathroom? Well,
and you know what? It's fine, because had you had to, you could have had your Switch, and on your Switch would have been a video game that's all about some good grind.
Look at Basil trying so hard.
Trying so hard to make this into the podcast.
To get back on topic, to not have Hannah mad at us all. Rightfully so.
That ship has sailed.
No, she's going to be mad at us no matter what we do. We might as well just like go off on as many tangents as we want.
Don't say that.
Or we could restart the round table and get to the second item on our list.
Okay. So the second item on my list was Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles. So in the last podcast, we kind of talked about I tended to go towards my safe space in the middle of this year. And one of the games that I really, really loved and I had huge nostalgia goggles for was Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles. Man, I love that game, and I'm so sad that apparently nobody else loved that game. It was very frustrating to try to get it, and I was like, we can all get it now, we can play together, and it will be wonderful! And then I kept having to explain every little detail about how the game worked to Basil, and then to Anna, and then to Barry, and none of them quite got it. So eventually I just had to play with randoms online. And I was very happy to play with randoms online, because that game, let me tell you, it is super hard playing it single player. But if you play it on, like, it has parts of it that are meant to be played, like, it has a single player mode to it, but the single player mode is still extremely hard. It was clearly meant to be a multiple player game. And I never actually got to play it multiple player until now, and so I'm finally very happy about that, and I loved it, and just for months, like, when I stopped playing Animal Crossing, that was because I started playing Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles again every night forever.
I vaguely remember playing the original with roommates, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, the idea was you'd go into a map, and one of the players would have to hold, like, a goblet or something that would clear out the miasma. Because you'd die if you got into the miasma.
Yes.
And so you had one player whose job it was to manage the crystal or goblet or whatever, and then everyone else was fighting vaguely like Secret of Mana style, I think?
Yeah, you know, action RPG, Basil, we did a whole podcast about this, didn't we?
No, Basil? It was a moment of awesome.
Oh, it was just a moment of awesome? Okay, well, it should have been a whole awesome cast. Grumble, grumble, grumble.
I never played this game in any version.
What was I even saying?
Vague action RPG?
Oh, yeah. Vaguely it was supposed Secret to be vaguely Secret of Mana. At the time, like, multiplayer, real time, those games were popular. And, like, Zelda Legend of the Four Swords had also come out at similar timing.
Yeah, this was in heavy in the midst of Nintendo really trying to get you with three other people that all own Game Boy Advances and all own cables.
Yes.
Oh,
they
yeah.
They very much wanted everybody playing together on their individual console.
With other consoles.
Buy the cable. Yes.
It was so weirdly complicated to set up.
It was. It was very weirdly complicated, and that's why I could never go back and play it, is because not only would I have to get my GameCube out, I would also have to get my Game Boy Advance out.
And find the cable.
And I had to find the cable. And they don't make any of that anymore. So...
Not to mention, find three friends who also had Game Boy Advances.
Oh no, just to play it single player. Like, not even talking about playing it multiplayer, just single player. Because believe me, I kept around enough Game Boy Advances to make other people play it too. Right, so... I love that game.
Yeah, you really should have talked to me first, because, yeah, we actually played that game a decent amount, and I've downloaded the free version that lets you do everything but like the last quest or something, so I'd be willing to mess around with it again, but I'm probably, knowing how rough that the update of the game is, and just like still how dated a lot of the features are, and
Yeah, it's not really updated. Like, it may have had a minor update done to it, but not really.
Yeah.
But I still loved it, and it was still great. And the plot, I want to talk about the plot of it, because I don't think anybody, so it actually has this really deep, really great plot that totally inspired the best tabletop game that I have ever game mastered. It's all about memory and the bonds you make with people, and it's just tremendous, and it hits you out of nowhere.
And something else that hit me out of nowhere was the discovery that while we never did an awesome cast about this Crystal Chronicles, in show number 6, we did have an episode about the DS Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles Ring of Fates.
Oh, yes, because we played that, you and me played those together, and those were a whole lot of fun. They took it into more of a, what is that kind of game called, where you swing the sword and you hit the button and it actually does, but it's still an RPG?
Action RPG.
Yeah, it was a much better take on the action RPG element than the original Crystal Chronicles, but the original Crystal Chronicles is still groundbreaking for just all the different things it tried to do.
So, speaking of groundbreaking things, there was a series that had 4 installments on the PlayStation 4 amongst other consoles. And it's just yet another set of games in a very long-running series. Kevin?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Trails of Cold Steel 4. Which, this is actually really a pitch for all the Trails of Cold Steel games, but...
I believe you mean The Legend of Heroes, Trails of Cold Steel.
Yeah, because honestly, never mind the 4 games in this set, there's probably like 5 other games you want to play before it, 2 of which are not available in the US. So this is going to be a real easy game to sell people on. This is made by Falcom, the Ease people. The Legend of Heroes series is kind of more their traditional RPG series, with the interesting caveat of they are all in an interconnected universe, an interconnected timeline. There's apparently in a secret room in Falcom headquarters, they have a massive board plotting out the entire timeline of the setting.
I do want to take a quick moment, if you'll pardon my interruption, Kevin, just in case people have only read about the games but have never actually heard the title pronounced. Ys is spelled capital Y lowercase s. That's it.
Yeah, Ys. I'm just realizing I have enough background in like mythology and medieval literature to think that sounds perfectly normal, even before I ran into the video games.
But tell us more about these trails and these colds and the steels.
Yes, the Trails of Cold Steel series taking place in a country called Erebonia. The titular Trails of Cold Steel is actually the railway network. But it's like, I know it's four, but it's like, this is like most of what I want to say is about the beginning of the franchise.
Well, the trick is that all four of these games are telling one story.
Right. The thing is, four is the culmination of a big, long-running story across several, like, you know, 50, 60-hour RPGs. That's like, you know, okay, it's like, at the very least, like, honestly, you probably want to at least play Cold Steel 1 through 3 before you get 4. I could argue you can play 3 before you play 4, because 1 and 2 are kind of a narrative pair, and 3 and 4 are kind of a narrative pair. And 3 does a pretty good job of setting up what went on before it, but boy, honestly, 4 jumps you right into it.
Well, that makes sense, because I really enjoyed Trails in the Sky, which was the game that took place before this just a little bit, but in a different country, because again, this is like the best example of a Marvel Cinematic Universe that's not Marvel, but just role-playing games.
Yeah. This is like Falcom writing grand epic fantasy that takes place in, you know, multiple places in the same world. It's just, instead of like writing a big epic series of novels, they decided to make it video games. It is actually sort of an industrial revolution kind of setting that also has magical elements, but it's a little, while still being very fantasy, it's a little more high tech than your typical fantasy genre, without quite jumping into the weird cyberpunk hybrid fantasy of a lot of Final Fantasy games.
Yeah, I can definitely say that I have now purchased the Trails of Cold Steel series on PlayStation that I play on. This is another series that I really kind of want to get into in this year. It's a lot, but in Falcom, I trust.
Yeah. A lot of the games have to do, whether in some of them as a student and in some of them as a teacher, of being involved with like the day-to-day life at a military school. And I actually think it does better than any of the recent Persona games about hybridizing let's socialize and let's do RPG things. And I actually think it does a better job than the recent Persona games in that regard.
Good, because those did not a good job.
Like, it feels more hybrid than... Yep, here's a lot of... what are you going to socialize with today? And are you going to maybe squeeze in a little dungeon grinding? But also, it's got a very, as the game goes on, an increasingly big cast of very memorable and likable characters. Some good, some bad. has pretty good voice acting in both the Japanese and English language versions. You can get it on... you can get all of it on PlayStation 4. You can get the first two games on PlayStation 3. It's all going to eventually be available on PC and probably Switch eventually.
Yeah, I think the fourth game is coming out later this year on Switch.
It's got fairly charming anime-esque art style. It does kind of drift into the combat system where it's going to eventually expect you to have a pretty good grasp on the game mechanics. And we'll start expecting you to know what you're doing. some RPGs, you really can just, you know, okay, I heal, I punch, we're good. And some of them really want you to know the mechanics. And almost all of the Legend of Heroes games drift into, you do understand the mechanics, right, as you get into the late game.
Although, speaking of anime art style and a hybrid of things, John picked out, I thought, a really interesting one to talk about.
Is it Evangelion?
No, it's Tales of Vesperia!
Yay! Tales of Vesperia! Yes!
No.
What?
Yeah, we already missed the window for you know, where we could actually talk about that game again.
No, Tales from Vesperia. Talk about it forever. Everybody needs to know what a good game it was.
You know, here's the thing. Every time I look at it and I see it's on sale, and I'm like, I don't think I can do it.
You sit there and you go, I could make Doug happy today, or I could make Doug cry forever.
Right? And why do something for a day if you can do something else forever? anyway. I wanted to talk about Genshin a little bit. This again goes under the category of, it's not one of the games I've played the most, but I've already talked about those games. So I wanted to kind of talk about a game that I just feel like needs to be talked about. I am not as horny for Genshin Impact as a lot of other people are. That doesn't mean I don't like it. I think it's fine. It's Breath of the Waifu. I just find it extremely interesting as a venture, because this game lacks for nothing in terms of, okay, this is a free-to-play game, what can I experience? Well, you can experience a whole damn lot in this game, including, you know, the story. Like, there's not really any limits to what you can do in the game. It's not like, you know, some mobile game where you have to have, like, this little currency to spend to play. And if you run out, you either have to, you know, wait 8 hours or, you know, buy a bunch of, you know, stamina or whatever the hell they use. You know, you can play the game as much as you want. You know, where they really sort of grab you by the wallet is trying to get a specific character, because you have to, you know, do the whole gacha thing and roll for characters and hope you get a drop. Mm. But the game itself, I've been playing it on PS5. It looks gorgeous. It's 4K 60fps. It's pretty much fully voiced. I mean, yeah, there's a few, you know, NPCs that you just talk to and you just have text, but the game's got a ton of dialogue, a ton of content to explore. It's a lot for a free-to-play game, and it's an interesting gambit, and it seems to have worked. But I'm really curious to see where this leads. Because we've seen mobile games that are kind of PvE. We've seen free-to-play games that are, you know, multiplayer versus, like Fortnite or Apex Legends, whatever. This is kind of the first, you know, action JRPG that's gone with a free-to-play model, and I'm curious to see what else will come down the pike if you know, more developers decide to go the free-to-play route.
Yeah, I've played a few minutes of it. I played maybe half an hour of it back when it probably after the first time you mentioned it to me, and I was, one of my first thoughts was, man, this is real pretty for a free to play game. This is prettier than it deserves to be.
My problem with Genshin Impact is eventually what I realized my same problem with Fate Grand Order is, I like it too well, and I'm really, really compelled to try to spend money on it. And I've actually kind of had to cut myself off from those kind of, like, gacha games for this reason.
I completely understand. I have for years been a proponent of any free to play but pay to win or pay for whatever games. The only way you actually win them is by not spending real money.
Barry currently plays this Star Trek mobile game. Out of spite. Out of spite. Because the game was so blatantly, it was so blatantly you have to pay in order to win. In order to win or be good at this game or spend hundreds upon hundreds of hours, that he said, you know what, bitches? I'm going to spend the hundreds and hundreds of hours. You're not going to make a dime from me. And he has still not paid a cent for that game. And the game has suffered some pretty critical problems. There was one point where all the krill playing the game left. So it was only whales and Barry. And that's not a good ecosystem for a mobile game. Like, a mobile game needs a krill for the whales to feed on, or else it just won't work. And so Barry was the only lonely krill for quite a long time. But now he's been playing it for so long that he has the presence of a dolphin, but he is not a dolphin. He has not paid a single dime on that game.
Then I respect the hell out of that approach.
Oh, yeah,
my approach.
I maintain he has technically won the game. No matter, no matter how long he plays it, he has technically already beaten it.
But tell him to be careful, because sometimes dolphins can be jerks.
Yeah. Dolphins can be jerks. That should be a well-known fact.
I keep paying.
The gacha game I play is called Food Fantasy, and it's cute. I'm pretty sure it's China somehow stealing information from me, but whatever.
100%. 100%.
It's fine, you got TikTok.
It's cute, but even I have to admit that, like, I give it, like, $5 a month. Like, I don't play it completely free to play. I give money to it, and that makes me sad.
What I wonder about with Genshin Impact, and I've watched some of Mike's streams, I haven't actually played it myself. I wonder, it seems like it probably takes more effort than a mobile gacha game, which is great because it's kind of the first of its kind, and it's proving that it can be done. But what happens when a bunch of other companies see that, build games of that same scope, and don't necessarily pull in quite the number of whales? Like, essentially, Genshin Impact is Magic the Gathering, and, you know, it's going to be followed up by all the other 90s CCGs that tried to emulate it.
I will say this game doesn't require... It requires an investment in time, but, like, the resources in the game are for crafting or for, you know, getting characters and stuff. And, well, yes, you need to be at, like, a certain level of experience and stuff to, you know, fight certain battles and access, you know, certain areas. I've not found it particularly oppressive. Like, I have to play this game every day if I'm going to, you know, do anything with it. You know, I can play it for a couple of minutes, I can do daily quests, or I can run around and just do whatever. It's a pretty casual experience in the sense of, you know, you're free to do whatever.
Well, all I know is I like my gacha games, like I like my girls who climb, like my horse idol girls that run, or my zombie idol girls that dance, powered by Psy Games.
You apparently like idol girls? Is that what I'm to understand?
Grand Blue Fantasy and Dragalia Lost are made by Psy Games. They also make they publish the manga for Iwakawa Climbing Girls, Zombieland Saga, and Usa Musume. It's a show about idols who are also horse girls that also run derby.
Oh, okay.
They basically dropped the idol thing after a couple of episodes, even though it's sort of still in there. I can't say I've actually watched more than an episode or two, because honestly, I didn't think it was that good, but that's a whole other point.
Wait, are we talking about anime right now? No, we're not talking about anime right now.
We're not See, I'm just getting out my bona fides that I like anime and things like Pocky and Smile DK and Garuga Mesh. Look, I'm one of those white guys. I just like Japan, period.
Yeah, yeah. Let's move there. Let's go.
I am
I'm ready.
The perfect person to talk about Ghost of Tsushima, which is a game about made by Sucker Punch, where it's a bunch of white dudes who made a game about being in Japan back in the times of the samurai. And let me tell you, Kevin, whatever, you know who is also this is their favorite game of last year? Naoki Yoshida.
Boom! Yoshida Slam!
I want to like Ghost of Tsushima, but man, the history is so bad.
Look, the more Naoki Yoshida, director, producer of Final Fantasy XIV and producer of Final Fantasy XVI, thought, man, how exactly did they create this game? Why create? He learned a lot from that game. Also, his favorite anime last year, Demon Slayer. So the dude knows what good stuff is.
Well, I believe him on that one, but like, I've even come to realize I'm more hung up on this than the Japanese are.
Yeah, you are. Oh, yeah. Japanese because, are not that hung up on actual history.
Because even the creator of Yakuza, Toshihiro Nagoshi, even though he said, Japan should have made this game, he was like, he's like, we definitely lost to them. It's a game that should have been made by Japanese people, but they did a monstrous job collecting data and everything. There's just, it's like, it's the kind of work made by non-Japanese people that makes you think or feel they're even more Japanese than us. I think it's amazing. We often believe Western people would never get certain Japanese things, but the game shows this way of thinking is wrong in the first place. What I'm saying is the Japanese are like, man, did you see this game these gaijin made? We are apparently awesome. Look how great our country is, how beautiful it is, and how badass we are. This is amazing.
Also accidentally played into some Japanese imperialist talking points, but that's a whole other... I believe that was 100% on accident.
I really, really enjoyed this game. I was really needing a new, big, open-world Assassin's Creed-y sort of game, and in some ways, this game really did it. Other ways, it did not. I really miss the ability to drop from any height and be able to land on the ground. Also, if there's a cliff face, I should just be able to climb it. Mm-hmm. What do you mean I have to have certain spots I can climb on? But I really, really enjoy it. There's a lot of areas, especially going to the various Shinto shrines. They really brought back the more classic Assassin's Creed of you've got to go through an area and the question is how do you use your tools to navigate your way through it and where are the places you need to find to be able to get through it. And I really have missed those kinds of levels and areas, and this game really, really did it well. The combat system was fun, and you know what? The fans of this game literally helped save a torii gate that fell in a tsunami a typhoon recently. And there was a GoFundMe for it from one of the shrine priests. And apparently fans found about it and like tripled its goal.
Now is super awesome.
So no, I really, really, really like Ghost of Tsushima. So if you need like an open world Assassin's Creed-y sort of game that's set in Japan and just is an Assassin's Creed, but it's a really, really good step to the left. This was a good game.
Unless you accidentally learned a lot about the Mongol invasion of Japan and you have too much history crammed in your brain like me.
Thankfully, I did not.
I look at the game and it's like, okay, what if you had a game set in the Spanish-American War, but everyone's in World War II uniforms, but period hats. But we were all using modern firearms.
I really liked running around collecting all the cool looking sword skins because you're always using the same sword, but you can change how it looks and the various outfits, and you can pet most all the foxes.
Petting the foxes was very important to the success of this game.
It was.
Yeah. Like, I look at this game and it looks so much fun, and then my pedantic part of my brain starts shouting at me.
But it's wrong!
Look, you can technically, the Japanese voice of Jin Sakai Meikincha, I'm pretty sure, is the same guy that does the One Piece Zoro. So you could technically just get lost and it's actually in character. It's good stuff.
Like, I in fact, I want everyone who thinks the game sounds neat to play it because they'll probably have a blast. I'm the one who's messed up.
No, it's fine. Charlie, you should definitely should play it because you won't have to wait for it.
We're okay. I assume that means we're moving on.
Yes.
I am going to talk about Assassin's Creed Valhalla, except that I'm not going to talk about Assassin's Creed Valhalla. One of the biggest games for me of 2020 was the waiting game for Assassin's Creed Valhalla. It's not often that I get excited about a game before it, well, period. Before I've played it anyway. I was in the process of really enjoying Assassin's Creed Odyssey when they announced Valhalla, and just the months of like following every so often, like seeing like new game footage or new news about like the weapon styles and stuff. That was a lot of fun for me. Sometimes it's as much fun to want something as to have it. And I mean, I did get Assassin's Creed Valhalla, but for Christmas, but I didn't play it until this year. So I can't talk about that. But waiting for Assassin's Creed Valhalla was actually pretty enjoyable.
Nice.
What was your favorite thing that you got to check out before the game came out?
The two biggest things were like when the news came out that you would be able to play, you could pick to play as a female character. That was the first big one. And then the second big one was when they said you could dual wield shields as weapons. And I just thought, that is so bonkers that that's going to be fun. Which I've not gotten to that part in the game yet, but looking forward to that. But again, I'm not talking about Assassin's Creed Valhalla. I am talking about waiting for Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
What I thought was an interesting, wild thing about Valhalla was that whether you play as male or female is actually determined by the cutscene. They chose, okay, we think the male version is best in this cutscene, but then you move on, and so now we think the female version is actually better for this cutscene.
That is a really interesting choice. And also, if I'm not badly mistaken, I recall it saying that you can also alter those settings in the game whenever. So yeah. If you started off playing as the male and want to switch to one of the other options, you can just do that whenever. You're not locked into anything, which
I forget cool. The in-story explanation exactly now, but apparently, like, when they're looking at the data, they can't tell if the person's male or female.
Basically, yeah, it's like there's two data streams and they're kind of mixed up, and it's like and one of the, I guess the tech or whoever is like, what do you want me to do? Do we want to isolate one to try to, like, strengthen the stream or whatever? That's an interesting idea. Yeah, it seems like super weak narratively speaking, but
yeah.
I really don't care as long as I get to play as a female Viking.
The fact that they even bothered to do any sort of narrative thing with it, I think is interesting and wild and very Ubisoft of them.
Yeah, it seems like they're taking character creation, which is usually this big event at the beginning of the game, and going, it really doesn't matter. You can revisit this anytime you want. And
Which is nice.
You don't have to re-roll.
Yeah. But again, we're not talking about Assassin's Creed Valhalla. We're talking about waiting for Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
And
which
now,
I think, should harken back to any, like, childhood of, like, you had a Nintendo Power and you read something about a game that was coming out and you were, like, getting hyped for it.
It's not Christmas, and it's not my birthday yet, so I can't play it.
Yeah.
You know, we'll you could be talking about Tales of Vesperia. I'm just putting that out there for you.
You know, if we're going to talk about waiting for a game, we should talk about Star Ocean till the end of time. Because the joke about that became, you know, till the end of time was how long it was going to take the game to come out.
And I can also go ahead and give you a sneak peek for when we do this next year. It'll be the waiting game for Back for Blood.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because they finally put a release date on that, and it's going to be, I think, June of this year, and I'm very hyped for that. So, go ahead and spoil next 1 year from now when we're recording.
But until then, we're going to listen to Dylan tell about his actual pick for this last year.
So my pick is the Jackbox Party Packs, which have been a good chunk of my social life under lockdown, quarantine, whatever we're calling it.
Yep.
It's kind of been a replacement for all the different activities that you would do when you got together with people in the before times. And what's so nice about it is it's really easy. Like, if you've got a decent computer, you stream it over Google Meet or Discord or Zoom. You've got a room code. Everyone logs in on their phone and you play whatever the game is. The games are really accessible, both technically and mechanically. Like I said, you just bring up your phone, plug Jackbox.tv in your browser, plug in your room code, and you can really convince anyone to give it a shot. These are like 10, 15 minute games. You're not investing a whole lot. That said, I do have a certain, like, it almost feels like it's settling into the pandemic version of Cards Against Humanity, where it can be all people want to play, and there are definitely crunchier options out there, but they're not nearly as accessible, and they're not nearly as intimidating.
Yeah.
A couple of the ones I like over the different packs, Quiplash is a good Cards Against Humanity or Say Anything like that. Plays really quick. It's a good warm-up. That's in Jackbox Party Pack 3. Also in Jackbox Party Pack 3, TKO. You draw t-shirts, you write captions, you match them up, and then everyone votes. The strength is there's no prompts other than what you decide to make up. The downside is improv is hard. It's tiring. And in 2020, it just becomes like the place where you dump your darkest reactions to whatever's going on in the news. I've drawn Four Seasons.
The dining room is now open.
I have drawn Four Seasons total landscaping so many times.
And Chad keeps drawing bloody knives.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. And people keep drawing genitalia, because sure, why not? Jackbox Party Pack 4, there's a game called Survive the Internet.
I love it.
Which is hard to describe. It's broken up into rounds where you're prompted to answer a question, and then someone writes an internet comment or post to make whatever your prompt is look ridiculous. It's probably the most aggressive player versus player game. Civic Doodle is in pack five. It's a drawing game where players take turns adding bits and pieces to a drawing. And it's one of those things that you could really only do in an online game, because you have people, like, you'll start with a prompt. Two people will draw an addition to that prompt. Then you'll vote, and whoever the winner is, the next two people will start from that point. Yeah, Fibbage is, I think it's in Party Pack 3. It's in a couple of them, which is basically an, or 4. It's basically a new version of Balderdash, which I have fond memories of playing.
Oh, yeah.
I love Balderdash.
Dictionarium, I think, is in 6, where you create a, you're given a word, You write the definition to that word or slang phrase. Then you write another word that then whoever's definition wins, you write another word that means the same thing. And then whoever's word wins, you write, you use that in the sentence. Plays really fast. You end up in weird places because it's kind of like Civic Doodle where you're building on the last person's answer. And talking points, which I think is in Pack 7, you deliver or annotate a PowerPoint presentation.
That one's a lot of fun.
It's just so weird. I don't know if anyone else has any favorites. Those are just the ones I could think of.
What's the one where you're a comedian on a cruise line?
Joke Boat. That's in 6 as well.
I wasn't... The first time we played it, I wasn't super enamored of it. With it, but since then I've actually really begun to appreciate it.
Yeah, a lot of these you have to get a feel for what they're doing. Like the first time I played Survive the Internet, it was like, what are you asking me to do here? But then you're like, oh, you're doing this thing to seed some options, and then I'm picking those options, and mm-hmm. you know, here's the pieces I can change, here's the pieces that are fixed.
Yeah, I felt like, at least in my social circles, it was like the first half of the pandemic was really taken up with Animal Crossing, and then this last section has been taken up with Jackbox. Like, that's the game that seems like it comes up more often than others.
That's because you ain't playing Round Guard!
That is true.
I do like Round Guard.
And I'm... Fair. I am like the one who's like, we could play D&D, we could play a role-playing game, we could play a map game.
We could play Among Us.
We could play Among Us. That's another one that would be really good.
I mean, the other issue is that we usually have like a decent-sized group of people with people cycling in and out, depending on what they have to do that day. So it's kind of, it is, like, that's why I think Jackbox does fit so neatly. Because you're not having to wrangle people for a like long amount of time for a lot of the crunchier games. Yeah. I mean, the crunchier games would be fun. It would just be so much harder to try to negotiate that kind of game with the group that we usually have.
I think it's also like Cards Against Humanity in that it kind of sits in the background. Not quite as much, but you can definitely talk about other things and get off topic between games and not feel like you're losing your place.
Yeah, it's very social.
But really, the question I've got to ask is, so after all this talk about video games, John, do you like League of Legends now?
Still no.
Okay.
Amazingly.
When you're winning.
Yeah, when you're winning, it's great.
Good stuff.
It's also worth pointing out, since we talked about Final Fantasy VII Remake, that the character I play the most is basically female Cloud Strife. I'm not even joking.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, Lightning's in the game? She's in League of Legends?
I wish. I wish. She'd be so badass.
Man, I really liked how the VII Remake really nailed how goofy Cloud really is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, too many of the VII franchise things try to just go like, oh, I'm the uber badass, but Final Fantasy VII, Remake, remembered. He was just a little bit goofy and a little bit weird.
I feel like older games, because I did this with Final Fantasy IV and Final Fantasy VI, because the graphics detail is not there, you can fill in a lot of gaps as to what the world is like. I would never have, like, playing Final Fantasy IV or VI, I would never have thought they were as techno as they are. So I could see someone doing the same thing with Cloud. Like, you're not seeing much in the way of, like, facial expressions or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, even Final Fantasy I had, like, war mech. And there's a couple of areas that you think is this one thing, but in reality, they're supposed to be like actual like desks. And actually, it's supposed to be like a an actual much more high-tech place that you're actually scouring through, not like a ye olde fantasy thing. They just couldn't do the graphic fidelity to know that actually there's a weird mess of high technology and fantasy in this world.
Is that the Temple of Air? Or the Tower of Air, or whatever it's called?
It might have. It's been so long since I played the first Final Fantasy.
Place where you fight Tiamat? I don't know.
All I know is you're walking along that bridge, minding your own business, and holy shit, it's a robot.
Oh, yeah. He only actually had like a 1 in 4 chance, so you could totally slip by him.
Yeah, I wasn't that lucky.
Well, the real secret to that game is make yourself lucky.
Oh, like save and
keep doing it until you do it.
Saving was expensive in that game because you had to buy either a tent, a cabin, or a house. And that was a lot of money.
Always buy a house and save frequently.
Those are real good words to live by.
Buy a house and save frequently.
Oh, I need to save.
So this has been the Awesome Cast, the Awesome Awards for 2020 Edipion. Congratulations, everyone. We did it. We got through 3 episodes of this.
Yay!
And congrats to y'all for listening. If you want to check more of our things, awesome. Go to awesomecast.com, where you can check us out all our previous episodes. We also now have a Discord. Join the Discord. Chat with us there. We've got channels. You want to talk about Gundam? Kevin's there. We can talk about Gundam. It's awesome. Mostly because everything is something type. So I'm like, well, I got to have new type or else the joke doesn't really hit. So you can find us. We have an AwesomeCast Discord. You can also follow many of us on Twitter. I'm at It's Basil Time. John's at J5 is Live. Kevin's at Twitless_Kevin. Doug has a Redbubble where you could buy stuff.
Yeah.
Charlie's at the_Sommelier. And Dylan's at Dylan Wolf. Podcast theme song was made by James, or as we may know him, as DJ Inabito. You can find it at djinabito.com. Our wonderful editor is the amazing, gorgeous Anna. You can also find her on Twitter at Angel Dogfire. The middle A is silent. And yeah, so those are the things. So y'all have a good one. And until next time, we're out.
Honestly, any of his repertoire from the mid-90s.
From like his first 6 albums or so, just solid. Just solid.
So solid. Hitmaker. That's what he is.
That's for goddamn sure. Just outright motherfucking hitmaker.
I think people today forget, and they need to be reminded. And country music peaked with Garth Brooks.
It really God,
all we remember from the inauguration is Bernie. In so many places.
Oh, I will like any Bernie meme on Twitter that uses that shot.
So many artists' alleys tables are getting taken care of right now.